words, but that was a good one. Good morning, church. It is good to be here, and we have got a lot to do today, and so I'm going to kind of skip some of that. I've got some young men over here who are going to be passing around some sheets of paper. Every family needs to get one of these sheets of paper. They are sign-ups for our small groups, and even if you don't think you're going to do small groups, take a piece of paper and do it anyway, because I'm telling you, you are. All right. These small groups, every family needs to get one, and that's the way we're going to do it this time. These groups will be meeting throughout the year, every month, once a month, from September through May, with the exception of December. We're going to take the month of December off. And our purpose in these groups, as we've talked about some time back, was to build community within this congregation. How many of you look around and see people you do not know or do not know that many? How many see people you don't know? I'll raise two hands. All right? We want to build community. And you may not get to know everybody, but we need to get to know a group of people well enough where we can share our heartaches, share our pains, and share in our discipleship and grow in the Lord together. And so that's the purpose of these groups. You can take these. We would like for you to turn them in today. Today. Which means I'm giving you permission to write during the sermon. Take advantage of this. All right? This is just a chance for you to fill this out. We want everybody, and I mean everybody. These groups will be meeting on Sunday evenings or what? Sometimes Sunday. That will be up to your group's discretion. We will find a place for you wherever you are. If you need to be meeting here at the building, we'll try to find an accommodation for that if we need to. If you would like to meet in a home, if we're able to group things geographically, we'll try to do that. Whether your group has kids or doesn't have kids, we will do our very best. At the bottom of this sheet, you'll see four lines. The more names you write in there, people you'd like to be in a group with, the more likely you are to be in a group with someone you like. So put as many names down there as you feel comfortable. I just put four lines. If you need more than that, that's fine. But we're going to do our very best to make sure you are in a group with someone that you already know and are comfortable with. We'll do our very best to make sure you're in a group that is somewhat close to where you live. And we'll do our very best to make sure that your group meets at a time that's suitable for you as well. All right, that's the wrap. You can take that. Yes, Mr. Gene. Y'all didn't get any back. Well, we told the kids not to give y'all any. There were some people back there, and I don't want to name any names, Miss Judy, that people didn't want to be in a group with. All right, we should have enough for everybody to get one. And the back row, too. Did y'all have any extras? All right, there's some right there. You can do it, Hannah. You can do it. Hannah's got some. I will make more copies. All right. I am amazed at this congregation. I just should tell you, there are some amazing people within this congregation, and I hope we will build those relationships. I was just astonished to hear that the Curses have been married for 70 years. We should give them a hand for that. 70 years. Wow. It is a curse to be married for 70 years. That's what I've learned. My wife and I, and then Emily and Eddie are getting engaged today. We got kind of the far ends of the spectrum having their shower today and about to get married. And we've got couples that have been married for 70 years. My wife and I just celebrated our 21st anniversary, and so I was super excited about that. And we were reflecting back on the time when we first got married and what that was like and thinking back those years ago. And I wanted to do something nice for my wife for our 21st anniversary. Last year for our 20th, we just moved here, getting settled into a new school. It was kind of hectic. We didn't get to do very much. So I wanted to do something nice for my wife. Kids were gone to the grandparents this weekend. Yay. They were gone, and so I decided, you know, we could go, and we made reservations at this really nice restaurant that we both love, and so that was good, but that wasn't enough. No, I want, and this was not per her. I was just thinking this was not enough. We need to do more than that. We haven't gotten to go away and spend the night away from home on our anniversary for several years. What with life being hectic, especially since my wife began teaching school, it's just been hard to do. And so I went on the Google, and I found this nice little bed and breakfast in a town that was not too far away from the restaurant where we were going to be eating. And so I went to their website, and I checked it out, and it looked great. The pictures looked great. The rates were very reasonable. The room that we wanted to stay in was available that Friday night. I was able to make reservations right there on the website. They told me directions how to get there right on the website, check-in instructions. Everything was just perfect. And so after we had this amazing dinner, it was absolutely fantastic. I mean, the food was just phenomenal. We drove just a few miles to this little town to stay at this quaint old bed and breakfast. And upon reflection, I've discovered a few items not covered on the website that I think really ought to have been. Number one, there may or may not be a large cat odor in the lobby, because that's not a tiny fur rug laying in front of the desk. It is indeed a large cat, apparently with some sort of musky glandular problem. Number two, your toilet flushing mechanism may or may not be fully operational. Some rudimentary knowledge of plumbing, or at the very least, the ability to fill your bathroom trash can with water and perform a manual flush could come in handy. Number three, your bathroom may or may not have a shower. When we say private bath, we mean just that. The shower, however, is very public and located down the hall. Number four, your bedroom door may or may not fully close. No worries, we've installed a $2 4-inch security chain from Walmart to keep you and your belongings safe. Number five, the railroad tracks are conveniently located just an easy 9-iron away. Even if you cannot see them from your window, our friendly neighbors, the trains, will give our community a great big howdy whenever they're passing through every quarter hour, all night long. As long as you can sleep through fire alarms, earthquakes, or Armageddon, you should have no problems getting a great night's sleep. And finally, number six, this was not the real finally, but my wife told me to edit some of this. Number six, breakfast is served anytime you like. And by served, we mean we left it sitting out in the cat lobby. And by breakfast, we mean those tiny, ageless, store-made turnovers and a lone package of instant Quaker oatmeal. Things just did not work out the way I planned. Let me just say that. And things never seem to work out quite like we planned, do they? It never goes like we really think it ought to go. Now, sometimes our laundry comes out pink, or our hair comes out blue, or our hair just comes out. Sometimes we fall and break things, our glasses, or our arm, or our heart. Our computers and our cars and even our bodies break down, right? Time and experience have taught us that these things are just going to happen. It's a normal part of life. It's just a part of the human experience. It's not that these things are good. It's just that they're not that bad, and we've sort of come to expect them. But what about the really bad stuff? War and famine, drought and disease, kidnapping and murder, abuse and neglect and abandonment, genocide, torture, the really bad stuff. What do we do about that? What do we do with that, right? Oh, now we know that this, by the way, these things, we know that they're going to happen to somebody somewhere. And we can kind of live with that most of the time. But what about when it's someone that we know and someone we love, maybe a friend or relative, our husband or our wife, our son or our daughter, our mother or our father. It's different when it happens to us, isn't it? All this bad stuff happens. And all the way, it makes us feel like criticizing God, right? One of the most often cited reasons for a failure of faith is this problem of pain or the problem of suffering. C.S. Lewis called it the problem of pain, and it goes something like this. This is the argument. As we continue our series on dealing with doubt, this is the problem of pain. Christianity makes a claim that God is both all-powerful and that He's all-loving. Right? Those are the claims of Christianity. But in December of 2004, a massive tsunami killed more than 250,000 people around the rim of the Indian Ocean. 250,000 men, women, children, infants, elderly, 250,000 people. Across the world, grieving families and journalists and skeptics alike all asked the same question: where was God? Now, one reporter wrote it this way. He said, if God is God, He's not good. And if God is good, He's not God. You can't have it both ways, especially after the Indian Ocean catastrophe. In other words, an all-powerful God would be strong enough to stop that. An all-loving God would care enough to protect us from that. But the Christian God did neither. He did not stop it, nor did He protect us from it. So either God is not all-powerful, or else He isn't all-loving. Either that, or He doesn't exist at all. So how do you answer that? I mean, have you ever asked yourself that question? Has someone else ever asked you that question? It's a hard one. So how do we answer it? Well, let me begin by saying this. If pain or suffering or evil have brought you to the brink of losing your faith, then I am so, so sorry for what you have been forced to endure. Your life, your experience, your pain, no one else really knows what you have gone or are going through. And that's the truth. And if you know someone who struggles with their faith because of their own suffering, now is not the time to let them know that you are right. Now is the time to let them know that you care. It's not the time to let them know you're right. The thing about us as human beings is, we can endure and will endure a great deal of suffering as long as we can see some sort of meaning in it. Now stop and think about this. We'll endure the pain of physical therapy or the pain of chemotherapy if we believe it will help our health in the long term, right? We'll go through those horrible things if we believe there's a purpose to going through those horrible things. We'll slog through years of education, reading books we don't care anything about, writing papers at all hours of the night, if we believe it will help our families or our finances in the long run. Brave men and women will even lay down their lives and suffer physically for friends or neighbors or countrymen if they believe it offers those people an opportunity at safety or freedom or protection. We will endure a great deal if we think there's a purpose to it. What we seem incapable of enduring is what we'll call pointless suffering. Millions of people are rounded up to be turned into slaves or placed into internment camps because of their race or their religion or just the color of their skin. A mother and her children suffer daily abuse because the husband or the father has a drinking and anger problem. A third world country warlord kidnaps children and forces them to witness or even participate in the killing of their own families. An all-powerful and an all-loving God wouldn't allow this sort of pointless suffering. That's the assertion. But with this assertion, you have an assumption. Namely, that if suffering appears to be pointless to me, it must be suffering. In other words, if I can't see the point in it, it must not have a point. But just because you can't see it, or just because I can't see it, or because we can't even imagine a good reason why God might allow this to happen, doesn't mean there can't be one. Right? Just because we're incapable of seeing or understanding doesn't mean it's not there. Let's take the story of Joseph from Scripture. We go back to Genesis chapter 37 through 40. And Joseph's brothers are really jealous of him, right? Because their father seems to love him more than he does them. And so what do? They decide to kill him first, and then they kind of amend it. Instead of, they'll go easy on him, and we'll just beat him, take his coat, and sell him into slavery. In slavery, Joseph works diligently and effectively at his new master's house, from being the most beloved son to being a slave in some other guy's house. But he works diligently in this master's house, only to be wrongfully accused of terrible crimes by his wife's by his master's petty, conniving wife. And so then he's thrown unjustly into prison. In prison, he uses hard work to become known as trustworthy, and uses his God-given gifts to help those who are around, namely interpreting dreams. But when the government official that he helps gets out of jail, he promptly forgets who it was that helped him get out of jail. All of this happens to Joseph. All of this pain, all of this suffering happens to Joseph. But listen to what Scripture says in Genesis chapter 39. But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness. And the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Now wait a minute, God was with him? That is success? Because it sure doesn't look like God's presence is there to me. It sure doesn't look like success to me. I mean, this is what it looked like to me, that Joseph keeps doing the right thing over and over and over, and Joseph is trying his very best to be the best that he can be, and that things keep getting worse and worse and worse. I mean, that's the very definition of pointless suffering in my book. And yet, if you know the end of the story, or if you keep reading, we see how God eventually used Joseph. How he took Joseph out of that prison. How he brought him before the very Pharaoh of the country in which he was imprisoned. How God not only saved Joseph, but he saved Joseph's family because Joseph was there. He saved an entire country from famine because Joseph was there. God protected and provided for his people and built a nation because Joseph was there. Tens of thousands, or we could argue hundreds of thousands or millions of people lived because Joseph suffered. Even if we couldn't see the point just a short chapter ago. So if you have a God who is big enough and strong enough that you can blame him for not stopping the suffering, you get that? If you could hold him at fault for not stopping the suffering because he's big enough or strong enough, then you also have a God who is big enough or strong enough to have reasons you know nothing about. If he's big enough to blame, he's big enough to have reasons that you can't know. That is the cold, hard logic on the problem of suffering. However, if you or someone you know is the one suffering, cold, hard logic stinks. If you are really struggling, then all this talk, all this philosophizing probably doesn't help you one iota. It doesn't get God off the hook for the world's evil and suffering. Yes, it makes sense. Yes, it's logical. But it doesn't let God off the hook. But here's the thing. God doesn't ask to be let off the hook. In fact, the Christian God doesn't want to be let off the hook. He came to earth deliberately to be put on the hook of human suffering. In Jesus Christ, God experienced the greatest depths of pain. Now, I want you to think about that. In Jesus Christ, God experienced the greatest depths of pain. Now, physically, Jesus suffered not only through the beating and the imprisonment, but a 3-hour-long death by slow suffocation and blood loss. And that is terribly painful. I am not trying to demean that at all. But there have been other far more excruciating, far more horrible deaths. We can read about them in the Book of Martyrs. We can read about them in the daily papers. People who lived for years under the onslaught of abuse and torture. But the physical pain wasn't the deepest pain. It's not the pain we're talking about. There may be no greater pain, and those of you who have gone through this may attest to this, no greater agony than the loss of a relationship that we desperately want. If you have an acquaintance, someone you know, you go to work with, you go to school with, someone who lives in your neighborhood, if you have an acquaintance that rejects you and starts saying, I want nothing to do with you and I never want to see you again, it hurts, doesn't it? Someone who slanders your name and says, I want nothing to do with you, that hurts. If that someone that says they hate you is not just an acquaintance, but they're a close friend, maybe even your boyfriend or girlfriend, if they reject you and say they never want to see you again, it hurts proportionately more, substantially more painful, doesn't it? But if your spouse does this to you, if one of your children does this to you, if one of your parents does this to you while you're still a child, the psychological damage is infinitely worse. The person that you most long to be with in the world rejects you is a depth of pain that most of us will never have to go through, thankfully. But some of you are already intimately acquainted with that. So what must it have been like not just to lose spousal or parental love, but the infinite love of the Father that Jesus had known from all of eternity? Not for 20 years, not even for 70 years, but the love of a Father you've known since before time. Added to that, on top of that, the pain of being rejected by your very creation. Those that you came to suffer and die and lay down your life for them. Rejected by them. That sort of pain, that sort of rejection, that sort of hurt is sort of, that is eternally unenduring. You just cannot go through that. It's no wonder that the prophet Isaiah says in Isaiah 53 verses 3 and 4 that he, referring to the coming Messiah, was despised and rejected by mankind. We know that. We heard about that. A man of suffering, familiar with pain. He knows it well. Like one from whom people hide their faces, he was despised and we held him in low esteem. Surely he took up our pain and bore our suffering. Yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him, and afflicted. That's what Jesus endured. And so, why does God allow evil and suffering? That's the question that we sort of came here to answer this morning. And I'm going to tell you, and this, somebody who's better equipped, someone who has more knowledge, or maybe has lived more years, might be able to come up here and give you a complete answer. I'm not that guy. Why does God allow evil and suffering? I'll say, I don't know. And that's the truth. I know sometimes. I can see it sometimes. But I don't know all the time. We may be able to look at the cross and and still not answer the question, why does God allow this sort of suffering to continue? But one thing we can know the answer is not. The answer is not because God doesn't love us. Whatever the answer to why does God allow suffering to continue, it's not because God doesn't love us. It can't be that He's indifferent to our suffering or detached from our pain. God chooses to suffer with us. Every step of the way, every heartache, every pain, every physical and emotional and spiritual and mental anguish, God enters into that with us. That's what He chooses to do. God takes our own misery and suffering so seriously that He was willing to take it into Himself, not to remove Himself from it, but to join us in our suffering. Yes, suffering is a problem. No, it's not one that we can dismiss out of hand. But neither can we dismiss the God who chooses to join us in it. Many of you have watched suffering that seems difficult to lay credit or blame. Maybe you had a loved one who endured the horrors of Alzheimer's. The preservation of the body, even if the mind deteriorates. Maybe you know and love people who struggle with diseases like Lou Gehrig's that preserve the mind while destroying the body. Maybe you know firsthand or know those who've endured cancers that ravage the body and the mind with the treatments at the same time. There are all sorts of horrible sufferings in our world. And it's easy to see why some who go through them might wonder what sort of God we have. But in looking back at the cross, we have to say that this God, whoever He is, loves us enough to go through it with us. And that's all we could ask of the best of friends. And this morning, if you're struggling with your faith, if you need prayers for comfort, prayers for strength, we want to encourage you this morning to make that known to the family, whether publicly or privately. We want to encourage you and lift you up. If we can help you in any way, won't you come as we stand and as we